So can I ask, how was your practice yesterday? Did you remember to practice yesterday?
Sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. Did you really? And no one remembered? You got involved and?
Well, I thought of it, and then I came to think of the first talk I ever heard coming to Christian camp about your inside is the Hall of Mirrors, to be careful what you put into the Hall of Mirrors because it magnifies. And I thought, I wonder how that Hall of Mirrors goes with the light. That's what I've been thinking about.
What have you been thinking about it? Did you get any answers?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about how you have this little, well, what I envisioned was like this little, almost like a wheel with light in it to keep those mirrors clean, and then that washing thing that you did, the light will do better, and then it's the mirror that can connect.
Yeah, a clear mirror just reflects everything back.
And increase energy back and forth.
Yeah, I love these visual metaphors. I mean, I'm a visual artist, so it's important to me to, and I create images for the mass market, so it's like, you know, what kind of images are you giving to the mass market? It's real important. But, you know, the images of stillness, you know, stillness, or, you know, the images of a snow-laden landscape without a footprint in it, you know, or some of you know I used to live in the Middle East, and I lived in an area that they called near the dead quarter of the Sahara Desert. And so, you know, there would be, you'd just see this vast landscape without anything on it. But if you put a footprint in it, you know, so these impressions that we have are like footprints, you know, and we have to sort of take the wind of the breath and clear those footprints away. Yeah, so everything's just as smooth as possible, like a still lake. Where everything's just reflected. You know, you can't tell. You can't tell if it's, you're looking at the landscape or the reflection of the landscape. And so there's just so many things about this. You know, just being in the present moment is so key. I had a friend once tell me, and she was quoting Ram Dass, by the way, who Bodhi's been talking a lot about. And she said, when you're in the present moment, and Ram Dass said, when you're in the present moment, there is no suffering. When you're in the present moment, there is no suffering. Oh God, you know, I'm always talking about suffering. Maya Kopa. But the fact is that we have to, I have a quote. My mind is working very quickly today. I must really be in the air element. So let's center. With palms pressed together at your heart, we'll say the Sufi invocation together. Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of a master, the spirit of guidance. And let us invoke all those holy beings that have inspired us on our path. And those may be great lights of humanity, the master saints and prophets, but sometimes it's just as simple as our kind grandmother or aunt and uncle, or, you know, a creature that loved us so much unconditionally. We invoke their presence because they've been lights and lamps on our path. And we invite them here. so that they may join with us in this prayerful time together, this curious time together, this exploration time together, and support us in our practice. May it be so. Did I address your comment? Okay. You see what I'm a good bad example. You see how I came hurriedly into the room, and then my mind wasn't very settled. So you can take that as a really good bad example. Hazarat Nikon talks about that, about the breath. And really, as far as I'm concerned, I really only want to teach about the breath. It's really the most important thing in life because it's our life. We can deal without water, we can deal without food for a certain amount of time, but not breath. And everything is in the breath. Right, Nir Rahman?
Of course.
Of course. Alhamdulillah. It's not revealing itself, but it'll be okay. Maybe it's here. So, while I'm sort of going through these papers, you can start with the practice of breathing in and just breathing out. And does anyone remember what we've been practicing with breathing in and breathing out?
Zahir and Manawar.
Zahir and Manawar. That's right. Zahir is the manifestation. And so we're breathing in, is that right, Trish?
Yes.
Zahir. And we're breathing out Manawar. Good. She's a good student. She remembers. And so we're generating this inner light. Pure light talks about it as a kind of epiphany of light or an explosion that illuminates everything from within. And then when we breathe Manawar, we let it go. And we're like an explosion of light. He talked about it as a projecting our light and we're bombarding the stars. Or I would like to say we're dancing with the stars. Oh, there's a show called that, isn't there? And think of it like you're becoming this superconductor. So you're breathing in. And you're absorbing all the light of the atmosphere. And you're taking it into your being. The instructions were hold the breath for a moment, sort of charge up with that light, feeling the infusion of the light throughout your entire being. And you know, this is a practice that happens in Sufism. They're very keen on light practices, but it's also a practice in Tibetan Buddhism. I don't know about other forms of Buddhism, but I do know a little bit about Tibetan Buddhism, and these kinds of light practices are core in some schools, especially the more esoteric schools of Tibetan Buddhism. And they use these practices for healing and sort of restructuring at the cellular and molecular level the body. So healing can take place in these very subtle ways, by concentrating on harmonizing those areas that seem to create pain or there's some sort of, you know, disease in it. And so as you breathe in, especially if you're having some sort of discomfort or challenges physically, you may want to focus on those areas of the body and look sort of with your inner eye and just trust whatever arises sort of at the energy pattern there. And now we're kind of getting, this comes from both Sufism and Buddhism. And if there's a if the sort of the fabric of the light is somehow not in a harmonious pattern, give a suggestion for it to come into balance and harmony. And just visualize that happening. Okay. Also, if you have pain, you know, any pain, physical pain, also can be psychological pain, you focus your breath on that part. You don't try to get away from it or, you know, compress around it. You just get big and you just sort of focus on that point with the breath, and you can use the light there. And you're not using the light to energize it. We don't want to energize it. But what we want to do is we want to harmonize it. So breathing in and out, absorbing light like a solar collector, and then just radiating without any attachment. So while you do that practice, there are two things I want to read. And if my voice or if this, you know, the readings are a distraction, just focus on the breath. So breathing in, Zahir, the manifest one, and out, Manaur. The instructions remind us to be actively involved in this practice. So as you breathe in, really feel the enlivening at the most minute level of your being, that the body is, you know, each cell is like a whirling dervish sort of dancing in ecstasy, in light. And transformed and renewed and regenerated and empowered. Right breathing is essential to your well-being. So breathe in first observe the rhythm of your breath and slowly bring that rhythm into a balanced swing. Meaning the inhalation is balanced with the exhalation, both in its meter or rhythm and in its depth and breadth. And then you can allow the wazifa, the mantra, wazayif, internal sound, to change into Nur, breathing in Nur and out Manaur. Nur being, it can be interpreted as sacred light or self-illuminating awareness or the light that sees all things. It's the light that exists within each one of us. It's that namaste. The light in me bows to the divine light in you. It's the Atman. It's the soul. It's consciousness. Whatever tradition you are connected to, they're always talking. It's Buddha nature, Christ consciousness, this light within us. And Nur helps us become more and more aware of that. That it's not anything external. We don't need to grasp at external things and pull them toward us. we can use those external things to come and penetrate us, pierce us, and help us to become more and more aware, illuminated, enlightened. So Noor, breathing in that light that sees all things, and then feeling from our most radiant part this projection with Manower. So in Hazrat Inayat Khan's teachings, he tells us that as we develop spiritually, we may get more sensitive to the vibrations around us. But I want to just continually keep giving out these instructions that use those vibrations as pure energy and fuel for your practice, your own enlightenment, so that you can enlighten others and invert the thinking. You have to, I would pray that we could invert the thinking so that we're not so much thinking about ourselves, but we're thinking that our purpose is to offer all of our gifts to the world. And you know, our gift is just our presence. It can be just the presence. You know, there's just people you feel good about being around. That's a gift. And also just offering that, like the sun, the radiant sun. And this is from the teachings of Pir Murshid Hazrat Inayat Khan about this gift, giving of your gift, of your presence. He says, there are those who are like a lighted candle. They can light other candles. But the other candles must be of wax. If they are of steel, they cannot be lighted. And then his own commentary on that. The voice of God is speaking all the time, but no one listens. Therefore, God has manifested as man that he, capital H, might speak with a louder voice. But even then, man does not listen. In the time of Christ, the inspiration was there, the voice was there, and the divine power. But how few were those who listened and understood. Whenever the Spirit of God has come forth in its true form, the world has been against it. Why has it been so? It is because man has two sides of his nature. One false and the other real. And before the true messenger can penetrate to the reality of a man's being, he first touches the false or unreal part, and that part revolts. And in this case of a man who does not revolt, even though the light reaches him in his heart, it is covered, and it only touches the cover. Such a man is attracted, yet he doubts. So now we have two. One that just immediately revolts, and one that can penetrate to some extent, but there's a cover, so it kind of bounces back. There are those egos who are not willing and ready to accept all that attracts them. The more something attracts them, the more they rebel against it, suspecting it of being a temptation. Even if they see the reality of something that attracts them, they consider the tendency of being attracted to be a weakness. There are egos who refuse to accept what their friend has accepted and refuse to admire fully what that friend has admired. And even if they really wish to accept something that their friend has accepted, they will refuse to do so. It is the tendency of that ego to swim against the tide, building a fortified wall between the messengers and the souls who long for guidance. There are, however, those who are like lighted candles. They can light other candles, and they can inspire others. But the other candles must be of wax. If they are of steel, they cannot be lighted. The heart must be like wax. It must melt. If it is like steel, it cannot be illuminated. So I offer this to you because as we're starting to take now this turn for preparing to leave this camp, you have to, in my opinion, this is my offering to you, continue to let your light shine and to generate that light and not let it be dimmed by challenges that arise. Let it to charge you even further. Bring it to the path. Infuse yourself with the enthusiasm. Enthusiasm's a good word on the path. To light yourself up and just let the light shine. And take that light deeply within for self-illuminating awareness. Do the inner work. And then let yourself radiate, and sometimes keep being silent about your work, your practice, your path is a good thing. It builds a kind of energy and magnetism around it. So as we go back into the world, sometimes we're very enthusiastic about our experiences and what we've learned. But let it just radiate in your presence. And people will feel that and maybe be curious. And then you can offer something. But projecting it onto someone is not such a good idea. It can discourage your practice. And that's what Anayat Khan's indicating to us here with this. Sometimes our friends can, not meaning to, but, you know, sort of challenging us on the path. I always think that's also very good. We can use that for our own checking in and to infuse our experience and deepen our practice. So I want to read this one thing that I was searching for in the beginning because I think that it's very key. There's a lot of suffering in the world, and you know, if you don't understand the meaning of it, then one can be so devastated by it. Now, I used to Google that, not Google, excuse me. I had one of the first word searches of Anayat Khan's complete works, And I would look up words in it, and I would do like complete search through all the volumes on words like pain and suffering. You know, like what was Murshid's teachings on that for us? Because, you know, I'm the kind of person, it's like I want to stick my finger in it. I want to be close to it, because there's a lot of energy around that. And if we can't be in touch with that fully and transform it within ourselves, then how could we possibly be of benefit to anybody else? I mean, spirituality isn't like a coat you put on. It comes from within. It's the Yanur. Nur. Yamanaur. So here's now the teaching of the Buddha on the causal law in terms of happiness. Okay, if you got that so far? The causal law in terms of happiness by the Lord Buddha, and this is on dependent origination. The Buddha says, suffering leads to confidence. Suffering leads to confidence. Confidence to rapture. Confidence to rapture. Rapture to joy. Rapture to joy. Joy to tranquility. Joy to tranquility. Tranquility to happiness. Tranquility to happiness. Happiness to concentration. Happiness to concentration. Concentration to the knowledge and vision of things as they truly are. Concentration to knowledge and vision to things as they truly are. You ready for this next line? The knowledge and vision of things as they truly are to repulsion. Have you ever met any of those Tibetan Buddhist monks? What are they doing all the time? When you think of them, what do you think about them? Yeah, but just like when you meet them, like when you're talking to them, what are they doing? Have you ever engaged? You have. I've seen you.
Well, that's where they live. There's nobody that they own.
Totally. But, you know, what's their face doing?
Smiling.
And what are they doing? They're laughing all the time. They're laughing. Because they understand this. The knowledge and vision of things as they truly are to repulsion. They've lost their fascination with this. Repulsion to non-attachment. Repulsion to non-attachment. Non-attachment to deliverance. Non-attachment to deliverance. Deliverance to the extinction of passions. Not good, not bad, just is. Not this, not that, just is. And that leads to saintlyhood. But it all starts with suffering. And it's the path to happiness. Have you ever gone through something really intense? And when you've gotten through it, then you, whoa, what I've learned from that. And it's made me stronger. You have a question, Shamsuddin?
The first suffering went to strength, not
confidence. To confidence.
I'm not sure that's
that. Yeah, that's the thing that stuck in my head right away is like all the people you know who suffering leads to giving up. Or
and are they people that have a path?
Oh. Oh.
Defective path is the question.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they may be, and they may be on the path to destruction, you know. But, you know, I think of things. Okay, let's give you another example. I don't like to talk all the time in abstracts. I think sometimes stories from one's personal life are helpful. Is it to you? Okay.
I think in other ways, growth comes from adversity.
Yes, that's a good way of saying it. Thank you.
Suffering is adversity. One grows from it and gains confidence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, because you're still there even after it, you know, washed over you.
Oh. That's right. Oh, you're still there. Hi. I'm still standing.
And I'm continuing and things, you know, I'm more okay than I thought it would be. So you can have confidence that you can cope. That's part of, I think, what it means. You go through great suffering, and it does not destroy you as your greatest fear was. I cannot go through that. And then you go through that, and you say, but I did. So I have confidence in my being.
That's exactly right.
Survival.
Yeah. Well, they say, you know what it said, that which does not destroy us makes us stronger. You want to come back to your seat? Yeah, no, don't worry about that. It's all energy. We just use it for our meditation. But I want to share this story because I think it's an important, you know, that it's this law of cause and effect. And do you trust that? You know, that if you do this, that will happen? You know, that there's action, reaction? So, In the Mrsha talks about that also in the teachings. It's all sort of in the Gathas. If you study the Gathas, you can get everything out of just that one volume, because I think that's sort of the core of the teachings. I do want to remind everyone that we have this online study group, and we're gathering worldwide. I've sort of made the analogy that we're rosary beads, and the message is sort of going through our hearts, and we connecting around the planet like a rosary. So, and I need your new email address because everything's bouncing back.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Thanks.
So, I've sent you several messages. They all kind of come back, but there's a delay, so I don't know what's going on with your server. But at any rate, so, you know, just imagine that. And we're sort of linking up with the message of Hazrat Anayat Khan. So once a month, you'll receive, and it's always on the new moon. I don't know if you've caught that. It started on the new moon. It started on the new moon of the winter solstice, as a matter of fact. I wanted to initiate this project so it could just start to grow with the more light, yeah? So the teachings are just an icon. There are some instructions about things to concentrate on the monthly papers. It can be just that. Or, especially people that are in the room, I hope there starts to become more dynamic dialogue amongst us through the listserv. It's a Yahoo group. Cabrillo, what's going on with the papers?
Do you want to? They're up on the table.
Okay.
That's that long.
Short.
Kind of like a bookmark.
Yeah, kind of like a bookmark. They have a gold bar across the top and a photo of Hazrat Anayat Khan, and it gives the web address.
So check into it if you're interested. Because it's all there. It's all anywhere. If you just concentrate on a path, you know, a viable spiritual path. Thank you, Tom. You'll get there, but you have to do the practice. I tell my students at college, I promise you this, I will give you every tool you need to succeed. I have confidence in that. I know it. I've been teaching 27 years. I see the results. But I say to them, I'm going to give you all the knowledge I have, but you have to pick it up and do something with it. And that's how the path is. I mean, we can go to these camps, we can read, we can go to the classes, we can blah, 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 we can talk about it. But if we don't do the practice, we're not going to get results. And it's got to be a practice that's done every day. And ultimately, all the time. You know, Karima Gita said she just started reading The Way of the Pilgrim. Have you read it? Just pray, you know, that instruction of St. Paul. Pray unceasingly. If you don't know what to do, don't, like, reach out looking for something to do. Yeah.
And don't assign yourself time.
Oh, thank you so much.
What did you say, Sean?
Yes.
Do not assign yourself practices.
Do not assign yourself practices. Work with an authorized medical professional. Spiritual medical professional.
Well, it's true. Otherwise, you're in the pharmacy fooling around.
Oh, my God. And weird things can happen, right?
Unless you like the school of crash and burn, it really works well.
Well, speaking of the school of crash and burn, I'll get back to my story. So, and all the time, you don't have to get totally drawn out by all of this activity here. You can keep that mantra going, that wazifa, Nur Manauer, by the way. So kind of train yourself to be here and also involved at the same time. Another diversion. I'm sorry. I'm in the air element. I hope this is useful. But I've lived in India for sometimes extended periods of time, and I've lived amongst the monks. Yeah, and I dress like this there too. So, just in case anyone wants to know, does she not dress up and wear makeup and jewelry? No, I do it there. So, and I live in a little room, and I sit with the monks, and I pray with them every day, and I do the puja, and I beat the drum, and, you know, I do that whole thing. but I've taken, you know, when I'm with them, and and sometimes I've traveled with some of them, and we'll take walks, we'll circumambulate the temple, or whatever, go to the temple. And I get really great training just in life with them, because, you know, I'll sometimes get interested in something external, like a flower or a bird, and they can actually experience my mind leaving and going there. And they always say, be very careful. You always keep your mind at home. Yeah, don't. You can let that impression come towards you, but you don't have to reach out. And that's a form of grasping. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And when it comes to you, you don't have to hold it. Like, this is mine. You can just let it rest. Yeah, does this make sense, this movement? This is Tantra I'm telling you about, not that. Okay, so. And for the recording, I made a symbol with a circle in my forefinger and my thumb and put the other finger through it. Oh, gosh. Okay. Or as one of my friends say, the baloney and the yoni. So, this idea of letting the mind be at home, and then the mantra's kind of there, you know. Last night, again, mind. I was sat in the car while I was waiting for my friends who had the keys to the car to drive me back to the room. I was so glad for those moments, by the way, so you don't have to apologize for having me there waiting, because it was really quiet. I was in the parking lot, and I was in the car, and it was like, the zikr was gone. I could feel it in the body, the vibration, and the sound was really loud. I could hear the internal sound going. It's really important to be still after you do the practice at night, if you can, the zikr especially, or even one's practice in the day. After you finish, you sit and you feel it. it was a great gift I had last night of those few moments alone without any stimulation. So the mind's at home and things come to us, you know, like the butterfly that comes and sits on our shoulder when we're quiet. But the story is this. I was doing a lot of work when I was living there, and I had been trying to help some people get out of India who really had a strong desire to come to the West and do some work here. And they're people that had been political prisoners in Tibet, and there was no option for them to go back to Tibet. And so I thought, well, we'll try. So I was spending a lot of time meeting with various government officials to figure out the process, both in the Indian government, Tibetan government, and American government. And I was also engaged. Cabrilla was there with me, and she was helping me with some of this. Sometimes you need wind beneath your wings, too. She's good backup. She's the generator that comes on when Nuri is going. I don't do that very often, but anyway. So I had relied on someone to do... I really didn't try not to ask too much of others, but I'd relied on someone to take care of a piece of business for myself, and they totally failed me, and that piece of business was crucial. My time was coming to an end. It was going to be imperative that I leave the country. You know, visas expire, airline tickets expire, et cetera, et cetera, and that person did not do that. And it really crushed me. I was someone I was paying to do it, too. It wasn't like, oh, do me this favor. And it sounds silly, but it was like I was just sort of a little worn out internally at that point. And so it really hit me hard. I felt a great disappointment. And I went into the temple where my Lama, Kamto Rinpoche, was doing puja. And he was doing the puja. And he could feel me walk in the room, and he just went, you know, like, sit down. And so when the puja was over, he asked me what was happening. And the monks ran to get a translator, because we always work with translators. And he took my hands, which is not typical. There's not a lot of touching that goes on. And he has the first throne that was made for the Dalai Lama when the Dalai Lama came into exile in his temple. My Lama's the tantric master for the Dalai Lama. Really wonderful being. He's going to probably be coming to the States, by the way. If you want to stay in touch, he'll probably be in Kansas City. You can come visit us. At any rate, he takes my hands and he sits down on the ground with me. And he asked, what's the matter? And I explained it to him, and he said, well, and it was translated this way, I have some good news for you, and I have some bad news for you. But the bad news is also good news, he said. And this has to do with the suffering. I haven't really lost my train of thought. Are you still doing it? Norm Manauer. He said, good news is you've been doing a lot of good here, helping a lot of people. And the good bad news is all your negative karma from this life and the past lives is starting to come to fruition and ripen. So what you see as something negative coming at you is really a gift of your karma being exhausted. So you have trouble in relationships. People diss you, like my students say, disrespect you at your jobs, you know. You're fighting with your family, you know, you whatever. Try to look at it that way as a purification, a clearing away. 2 days before I got ready to leave for India to live there, my grandmother, who I was very close to, died. So they went at the funeral before I left. And some of you know Champa Lumpo, Lama Champa, that lives at that point was living with us. I was married to Ollie Cotter. And I was in the funeral car with my mother. And Larry, Ollie Cotter, was driving my car. And Chompa was in the car. And they had a terrible accident.
Oh.
And you know what Chompa did? This is very good. This is very good. Nuri's going to have a very good trip to India. That's all. The obstacles are getting cleared away on her path. Like that. You see what I'm saying? Like, just that his mind went like that. Like, oh, no, now what are we going to do? The car's wrecked. She's going to be upset. Her grandmother just died. Oh, poor thing. Didn't do that at all. Oh, this is such a great thing. Can you get a little bit of that and take that with you? Do you understand? Yeah? Understand?
Yeah. When a glass got broken, my mother would say in Kasera Shara, means the bad karma has been broken.
That's it.
The bad news is that the key to heaven has been lost, but the good news is the door was left unlocked.
That's right. That's right.
I like that.
Yeah. That's right. Or like Leila said last night, there isn't even a door. It's just everywhere. It is.
I like that so much, that story, because it's sort of medicine, the antidote to what has lived in me in terms of some of the New Age thoughts that I've, you know, passed through about how if something bad happens to you, well, you just, you know, you weren't living right enough. I mean, why weren't you monitoring your thoughts well enough? What, you're just not a good enough person, you know? Instead of just like, well, things are going to happen to a lot of different people, and perhaps they are ways of purifying.
Bring it all to the path. The path. Bring it to the path. And really, when one's suffering, you must always remember you're not alone in that. You think to yourself, my gosh, here I am, I'm suffering, but how many other people are also experiencing this suffering or even something worse than this suffering? And then you say to yourself, then I offer my suffering for their benefit. You make something meaningful out of your suffering. I will take this, I will purify my karma, I will use this for the energy of my practice, and I will offer that practice for the benefit of others. I have to read this. This expresses that. I do this to my college students too. I make them late for their other classes. So sorry. But I want to share this. Please reveal yourself. And we'll offer this in dedication for this time together. This is from Shanti Dev, the great Indian saint, Buddhist saint. He wrote The Way of the Bodhisattva. May I become food and drink in the eons of famine for those poverty-stricken sufferers. May I be a doctor, medicine, and nurse for all sick beings in the world until everyone is cured. Can you put your palms together? Yeah. We're dedicating the merit, and this is the mudra for doing that. May I become never-ending wish-fulfilling treasures, materializing in front of each of them as all the enjoyments they need. May I be a guide for those who do not have a guide. This is your prayer. May you be a guide. May we be a guide for those who do not have a guide, a leader for those who journey, a boat for those who want to cross over, and all sorts of ships, bridges, beautiful parks for those who desire them, and a light for those who need light. And may I become beds. And may I become beds for those who need rest. And a servant to all who need servants. May I become the basic conditions for all sentient beings, such as earth or even the sky, which is indestructible. May I become the living conditions for all sentient beings, until all sentient beings are enlightened. And one more line, which does not go with this prayer, but I think is very significant in relationship to our discussion today. While their evil ripens in me, may all my virtue ripen in them. You see, you take it on and you transform it. And you give it back as loving kindness, compassion, and great equanimity. Soha. Amen. May you have a blessed day. Cabrilla, do you have anything to say about this?
I mentioned at the beginning that people weren't here. I've been recording this class each day, so if anyone would like copies, I'll probably post it to the web somewhere and I can send out a link. So please let me know if you'd like to give me your email address. I can send you that link.
Thank you.
Okay. And I do have the medicine Buddha. He's given it to me.
I do that practice for my mother, and she's been turtling for a long time, let me tell you. And I really mean that. They gave her 1 foot in the grave 4 years ago. Like, go home, get everything together, and she's still with us. I do that practice. I visualize her, and wherever I see that pattern emerge, I ask the color and the pattern to come to balance. Anything's possible.
If I could email you,
please, or call me. Yeah,
okay.
Skype me, whatever.
Thank you so
please. Sometimes we don't get cured, but we're healed.
Actually, they say I'm going to be cured.
Yes, yeah.
Very, very good. Very.
To stop it, you just...